So we continue reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 5, text 41, and from where we left the other week. Vasudeva Sankarsana Pradyumna Niroda Vitiya Chaturvyuha Eturiya Vishuddha. Vasudeva Sankarsana Pradyumna and Aniruddha constitute the second quadruple. They are purely transcendental. In the Lagu Bhagavatamrita, verses 44-66, there is a lucid explanation of the inconceivable potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, negating Shankaracharya's statements. The Mahavaraha Purana declares, Sarve nitya shashvatascha dehastasya paratmana anopadana rahita naiva prakriti jagvachit. All the varied expansions of the personality of Godhead are transcendental and eternal, and all of them repeatedly descend to all the different universes of the material creation. Their bodies, composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, are everlasting. There is no chance of their decaying, for they are no creations of the material world. Their forms are concentrated spiritual existence, always complete with all spiritual qualities, and devoid of material contamination. Confirming these statements, the Narada Pancharatra asserts, Maniryata vibhagena nila pita dibiryata rupa bedam avapnoti dhyana beda tatachuta. The infallible personality of Godhead can manifest his body in different ways, according to different modes of worship, just as the Vaidurya gem can manifest itself in various colors, such as blue and yellow. Each incarnation is distinct from all the others. This is possible by the Lord's inconceivable potency, by which he can simultaneously represent himself as one, as various partial forms, and as the origin of these partial forms. Nothing is impossible for his inconceivable potencies. Krishna is one without a second, but he manifests himself in different bodies, as stated by Narada in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Chitram bataitat ekena vapusha yugapat pritak griheshu Dyastasahasram Striya Eka Udavahat. It is wonderful indeed that one Krishna has simultaneously become different Krishnas in 16,000 palaces to accept 16,000 queens as his wives. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:69-2. The Padma Purana also explains, Sadiva Bahu Dabhutva Nirguna Purushottama Ekibuya Punasete Nirdisho Harir Adikrit. The same personality of Godhead, Purushottama, the original person, who is always devoid of material qualities and contamination, can exhibit himself in various forms and at the same time lie down in one form. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Yajanti tvam mayas tvam vai bahumurtyeka murtikam. O my Lord, although you manifest yourself in varieties of forms, you are one without a second. Therefore, pure devotees concentrate upon you and worship only you. Bhagavatam 10:47. In the Kurma Purana it is said, Astulash chananush chaiva, stulo nush chaiva sarvata, avarna sarvata prokta, shamo raktantalochana. The Lord is personal, although impersonal. He is atomic, although great, and he is blackish, and has red eyes, although he is colorless. By material calculation, all these may appear contradictory, but if we understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has inconceivable potencies, we can accept these facts as eternally possible in him. In our present condition, we cannot understand the spiritual activities and how they occur. But although they are inconceivable in the material context, we should not disregard such contradictory conception. So the Supreme Truth cannot be only one. Otherwise, it's like limiting him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is one and at the same time many. Some people ask, are you believers of many gods? And we say, God is one, but at the same time is many because so he wants. He wants to be many. And the reason is that he has so many qualities that cannot compatibly manifest them, manifest all of them together in the same personality. So he manifests himself in many personalities so that he can be compatible. Just to make you an example, can you see Krishna, Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna, while playing with boys, killing demons? So although it appears in the Shastra that even a small Krishna kills demon, actually, the moment he kills demons, he's not actually the Vrindavan Krishna. It's Svasudeva. It's a different personality, killing demons. So killing demons, it takes specific forms to kill demons, to do this, to do that. The Krishna in Kurukshetra or in Dvaraka is a different Krishna. If he wants to inspire terror to a demon, in the heart of a demon, he cannot appear as in the form of a flute because he will not be terrorized. He takes the form of a lion, so that the demon will be afraid. So in this way, Krishna has so many qualities that he takes a different form to manifest them, to live with them. So this is the reason. So if somebody says, well, God cannot be many, then you say, then you are limiting God. Why God cannot be many? But there is one who is the origin of all. That is called the Krishna, the Bhagavan Svayam, which means the Bhagavan itself, the original. That's why Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used this term, this term, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Supreme Personality of Godhead means there are many personalities of Godhead, but one is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna of Vrindavan, the one who plays the flute on the bank of the Yamuna, he is the supreme form of the Godhead. So, if there is any question, otherwise we go on reading. Although it is apparently inconceivable, it is quite possible for the Absolute to reconcile all opposing elements. Srimad Bhagavatam establishes this in the 6th canto, 6.9, 34, up to 37. O my Lord, your transcendental pastimes and enjoyments all appear inconceivable because they are not limited by the casual and effective actions of material thought. You can do everything without performing bodily work. The Vedas say that the Absolute Truth has multifarious potencies and does not need to do anything personally. My dear Lord, you are entirely devoid of material qualities. Without anyone's help, you can create, maintain, and dissolve the entire qualitative material manifestation. Yet, in all such activities, you do not change. You do not accept the results of your activities, unlike ordinary demons and demigods who suffer or enjoy the reactions of their activities in the material world. Unaffected by the reactions of work, you eternally exist with your full spiritual potency. This we cannot fully understand. Because you are unlimited in your six opulences, no one count your transcendental qualities. Philosophers and other thoughtful persons are overwhelmed by the contradictory manifestations of the physical world and the propositions of logical arguments and judgments. Because they are bewildered by word jugglery and disturbed by the different calculations of the scriptures, their theories cannot touch you, who are the ruler and controller of everyone and whose glories are beyond conception. Your inconceivable potency keeps you unattached to the mundane qualities, surpassing all conceptions of material contemplation. Your pure transcendental knowledge keeps you beyond all speculative processes. By your inconceivable potency, there is nothing contradictory in you. People may sometimes think of you as impersonal or personal, but you are one. For persons who are confused or bewildered, a rope may manifest itself as different kinds of snakes. For similar confused persons who are certain about you, you create various philosophical methods in pursuance of their ascertained positions. We should always remember the differences between spiritual and material actions. The Supreme Lord, being all spiritual, can perform any act without extraneous help. In the material world, if you want to manufacture an earthen pot, we need the ingredients, a machine, and also laborer. But we should not extend this idea to the actions of the Supreme Lord, for he can create anything in a moment without that which appears necessary in our own conception. When the Lord appears as an incarnation to fulfill a particular purpose, this does not indicate that he is unable to fulfill it without appearing. He can do anything simply by his will, but by his causeless mercy, he appears to be dependent upon his devotees. He appears as the son of Yashoda Mata, not because he is dependent on her care, but because he accepts such a role by his causeless mercy. When he appears for the protection of his devotees, he naturally accepts trials and tribulations on their behalf. Everything seems quite clear. There is no need of questions. This is a huge commentary. Very beautiful. In Bhagavad Gita it is said that the Lord been equally disposed towards every living being, has no enemies and no friends, but he has a special affection for a devotee who always thinks of him in love. Therefore, neutrality and partiality are both among the transcendental qualities of the Lord, and they are properly adjusted by his inconceivable energy. The Lord is Parabrahman, or the source of the impersonal Brahma, which is all-pervading feature of neutrality. In his personal feature, however, as the owner of all transcendental opulences, the Lord displays his partiality by taking the side of his devotees. Partiality, neutrality, and all such qualities are present in God. Otherwise, they could not be experienced in the creation. Since he is the total existence, all things are properly adjusted in the absolute. In the relative world, such qualities are displayed in a perverted manner, and therefore we experience non-duality as a perverted reflection. Because there is no logic to explain how things happen in the realm of spirit, the Lord is sometimes described as being beyond the range of experience. But if we simply accept the Lord's inconceivability, we can then adjust all things in him. Non-devotees cannot understand the Lord's inconceivable energy, and consequently for them it is said that is beyond the range of conceivable expression. The author of the Brahma Sutras accepts this fact and says, Shrutestu Shabda Mulatvat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not conceivable by an ordinary man. He can be understood only through the evidence of Vedic injunctions. The Skanda Purana confirms, Achintya Kalu Yei Bhava Natam Starkena Yojayet. Matters inconceivable to a common man should not be subject for argument. We find very wonderful qualities even in material jewels and drugs. Indeed, their qualities often appear inconceivable. Therefore, if we do not attribute inconceivable potencies to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we cannot establish his supremacy. It is because of these inconceivable potencies that the glories of the Lord have always been accepted as difficult to understand. Ignorance and the jugglery of words are very common in human society, but they do not help one understand the inconceivable energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If we accept such ignorance and word jugglery, we cannot accept the Supreme Lord's perfection in six opulences. For example, one of the opulences of the Supreme Lord is complete knowledge. Therefore, how could ignorance be conceivable in him? Vedic instructions and sensible arguments establish that the Lord's maintaining the cosmic manifestation and simultaneously being indifferent to the activities of its maintenance cannot be contradictory because of his inconceivable energies. To a person who is always absorbed in the thought of snakes, a rope always appears as a snake. And similarly, to a person bewildered by material qualities and devoid of knowledge of the Absolute, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears according to diverse bewildered conclusions. That's an interesting note that Srila Prabhupada is making by saying that if someone always thinks of matter, then he will not understand Krishna as being transcendental, because it's always thinking of matter. So it will think Krishna as the as a material personality. And so like Hiranyakashipu, he was thinking about power because he was so powerful. When Nrisimhadeva appeared, he thought of him just as another powerful personality. So he wanted to fight with him. So everyone will project his own consciousness on the Supreme Personality and will think that he is in such a way according to his projection, the projection of his mind, of his consciousness. Someone might argue that the Absolute will be affected by duality if he were both all cognizance, Brahman, and the personality of Godhead with six opulences in full, Bhagavan. To refute such an argument, the aphorism Svarupa Dvayam Ikshate declares that in spite of appearances, there is no chance of duality in the Absolute, for he is but one in different manifestations. Understanding that the Absolute displays varied pastimes by the influence of his energies, at once removes the apparent incongruity of his inconceivably opposite energies. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.4.16 gives the following description of the inconceivable potency of the Lord. Karmani ani hasya bhavo bhavasyate durgashrayo taribhayat palayanam kalatmano yat pramada yutashraya svatman rate kidyati dir vidam hiha. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to do, he nevertheless acts. Although he is always unborn, he nevertheless takes birth. Although he is time, fearful to everyone, he flees Mathura in fear of his enemy to take shelter in a fort. And although he is self-sufficient, he marries 16,000 women. These pastimes seem like bewildering contradictions, even to the most intelligent. Had these activities of the Lord not been a reality, sages would not have been puzzled by them. Therefore, such activities should never be considered imaginary. Whenever the Lord desires, his inconceivable energy, Yogamaya, serves him in creating and performing such pastimes. The scriptures known as the Pancharatra Shastras are recognized Vedic scriptures that have been accepted by the great Acharyas. These scriptures are not products of the mode of passion and ignorance. Learned scholars and brahmanas, therefore, always refer to them as Sattvata Samhitas. The original speaker of the scriptures is Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is especially mentioned in the Moksha Dharma 349-68, which is a part of the Shantiparva of the Mahabharata. Liberated sages like Narada and Vyasa were free from the four defects of conditioned souls, are the propagators of the scriptures. Sri Narada Muni is the original speaker of the Pancharata Shastra. Srimad Bhagavatam is also considered a Sattvata Samhita. Indeed, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam. Srimad Bhagavatam is a spotless Purana. Malicious editors and scholars who attempt to misrepresent the Pancharatra Shastras to refute its regulations are most abominable. In the modern age, such malicious scholars have even commented misleadingly upon Bhagavad Gita, which was spoken by Krishna, to prove that there is no Krishna. How the Mayavadis have misrepresented the Pancharatrika Vidhi will be shown below. So we arrived at page 411. We read it all. So next time will begin from 412, and it's going to be very interesting. So if there is any question, or we can discuss, otherwise we'll close here. Thank you. Dai, Prabhu. I don't understand, excuse me. Yes.
I have written so many books to tell you you cannot understand Krishna. So what is our actual goal, whether to read these books and try to understand or follow our acharya, Mahajana Nema? So which is the correct way to understand Krishna? Though they said it is inconceivable and it is cannot be understood. Duality and contradiction, these are things that when you preach to the people how to understand, they say you only didn't understand, then what you can preach.
Yeah. Our philosophy is so vast, is so big. It's the most complex philosophy ever conceived. It comes from God. So because it comes from God, and God is not only one, is one and many at the same time. Also, the philosophical concepts regarding the Lord are similarly one and many at the same time, and there is no contradiction. While the Shastras say that the Lord is inconceivable, at the same time, there are overwhelmingly an overwhelming number of statements where Acharya say, try to understand. So at the same time, we cannot understand, and we are urged to understand. The fact when Shastra say you cannot understand means you cannot understand it all. But that doesn't mean that we cannot understand anything. We can understand something. And that something is enough for our purpose, which is to get liberation from material identification and to develop love of God and therefore a pure devotional service. That we can understand. Just like a glass cannot contain the water of an ocean, but it can contain some water. So the purpose of the glass is to be filled up. So you put some water, the maximum possible. After that, it's not possible. So we had to understand, and that's why Srila Prabhupada wrote so many books, and all our acharyas wrote so many books, and Krishna himself wrote books, and Krishna himself spoke. So if philosophy or Krishna's activities were inconceivable, then what's the point of writing books? It was enough to write, you cannot understand Krishna, that's it. You know, just a little piece of paper like this was the Shastras. But it's not like that. Also, there is another perspective by which we can look at the problem, which is there are particular kinds of illusions, particular kinds of inconceivable activities that Krishna performs out of his natural frolic nature. He does it because just he likes to do it. He likes to confuse his devotees because it's fun. That's all, you know. And just like when there are innumerable stories we can say about this. and one Krishna when Brahma kidnapped the cows, and we all know the story, of course. So everyone was amazed. It was fun to look at it, you know, and Krishna had fun looking. The people say, well, what is this? How come we love our sons and our cows even more? And the cows were crazy after the calves. And nobody would understand how come so much love, in natural love, was not. Everyone loves his son, but that love was like ecstasy. Was like could not be understood. Not. So Krishna was having fun. So in this sense, there is one particular energy who works with Krishna, creating all this place, which is called Yoga Maya. You know, and this Yoga Maya is an energy for sometimes it's called a Lila Shakti, which means the particular energy to facilitate pastimes. So even great scholars like Narada Muni, sometimes they are puzzled. They cannot understand why Krishna is doing that, how Krishna does is that, you know, and that's how it's possible to live an eternal life. Can you imagine an eternal life without varieties, without changes, always the same thing? You know, eternity is a long time, you know. You got to do something, otherwise you get bored. So fortunately, not only Krishna is eternal, but also his pastimes are infinite. So that's how it is possible to put together eternity and infinite number and quality of pastimes. Because if that was not the case, then it would have been a problem. Although I kind of joked about the eternity being boring without varieties. Actually, if you think it, it's not a joke. It's true. You got to do something. You know, there must be variety. And so that's why Krishna is eternal, because he's also infinite in his pastimes. And we also have pastimes. It's not the only Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world. So there are an infinite number of persons in the spiritual world, and all of them having pastimes. So there is a lot to do, a lot to speak, a lot to observe. So we had to understand this philosophy. We had to, both for our purification and the purification of others, of course. The two things are together. Because if we purify, because the best way to purify ourselves is to satisfy our spiritual master, who says Krishna consciousness. And the purification we get from preaching Krishna consciousness is not, how you say that in English, cannot be compared, it's not comparable to the advancement you can make just by studying by yourself. You study, and you make some advancement, of course. But the advancement we make by preaching Krishna consciousness is much, much more. Why is that? Because that's the order of the spiritual master. We actually advance by the grace of the spiritual master. If he had told just to go to Vrindavan and find the cave in the Govardhan, you know, we would have advanced in that way. But our spiritual master said, no, you preach Krishna consciousness. Now you work. The samadhi will talk later. You know? So the order of the spiritual master is supreme. What he said must be done. And that's our life. It's not for a period of life. It's the life. So we have a mission in life. We are very lucky because we got something to do. There are many people outside who, when they get to 60, 70, they don't know what to do with their life. They go playing cards or playing, what's the name, baseball or this kind. they don't know what to do with their lives. So we have a mission. We have something to do. And it's so vast. Our scripture, there are incredible number of scriptures. We don't get bored. And this, our life is so beautiful, so nice. We have, yeah.
Hare Krishna. Vedas tell us about so many things about karma kanda, jnana kanda, and upasana kanda, and other things, bhakti yoga also. But again, Krishna also tells to Arjuna all these things again and again in Bhagavad Gita. Then lastly, he says, now leave everything, sarvatarma parityaja, mamekam sharanam. So why this contradiction? He himself has given all these things to us, Vedas. In Veda, he only told, because I am sarva, Prabhu. Yes. So when he has given these things, again he says, leave everything and come to me, sarvadharma parityaja. So why this contradiction?
It is only apparent contradiction. If you have a ladder with 10 steps, one says, well, the first step or the second or the third step, it's very important. And so why I should leave the third step? Well, because the whole point of the steps is to get to the last step. If because of attachment or naivety, you don't leave the third step, then you miss the point. You miss the point of the real reason of the one, of the first, or second, or third step. And that's why Sarva Dharma Parityaja, leave your steps, leave the inferior steps, and go on. Because the reason of those steps is to arrive to the fourth, or to the fifth, and then to the last one, which is the real ultimate goal of the ladder. So we had to learn the context of the Vedas, not just the Vedas. The context, the complete context is given by studying and understanding the whole body of knowledge, not just the Vedas. The Vedas are basically Karmakanda, not only Karmakanda, of course, because there are sections of the Vedas who do not teach, like each Vedas are divided into four, and the four is the Upanishad, which is not Karmakanda. They teach something else. But that the Vedas were only a part of the ladder, it's been told directly by the author of the Vedas, Srila Vyasadeva. And we know the story, how after having written all the Vedas and all the Itihasas, etc., he felt incomplete. He could not understand why. Because when you write the Vedas, you should be very satisfied. That's one of the most incredible masterpiece of human and divine work. If you are able to write the Vedas, you are really someone. So he didn't feel really complete, and he did not understand why. So wandering, by Krishna's mercy, Śrīla Nārada Muni came and explained to Vyasadeva the reason why he was not. Because he built up a ladder without the last steps. So then you could not arrive at the maximum arrivable, you see. And what was this last step? The last step was the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So much so that Narada Muni says that those activities, those literature who do not describe the transcendental activities, you know the Sanskrit verse, Prabhu? You are such a pandit. Anyway, it's one of the first verses in the chapter where Narada Muni speaks to. Those activities who do not describe, it's not pala yadiratim, something like that. the transcendental qualities and activity of the Supreme Person are useless. Because what is the reason of teaching karma kanda or jnana kanda? What is the reason? Why you act? You in the Vedas, it is explained the way of the right action so that you can get the right reaction. So what do you do with your act, your reaction? Basically, you enjoy life, you know, because you get a good reaction, so you get a good family, you get money, you get influence, so you are respected, and you enjoy, because enjoyment is so natural. Every one of us wants to enjoy, because we are made of enjoyment, we are made of ananda. So, and but we see that the enjoyment in the material world is not the one we actually should want, because every one of us knows that everything in the material world is temporary and illusory. Being temporary is not the main problem. The main problem is that it is illusory, because if it was just temporary, at least we could enjoy for some time. But actually we cannot enjoy even for that some time. And people who seem to be enjoyment is because they don't know what is enjoyment. Sometimes jokingly I say, you don't know what is pizza until you go to Italy, you know, to eat a pizza. By eating pizza in America, you think you are eating pizza, but it's not. So that's something else. So the enjoyment in the material world is so, it's not a real enjoyment. And you think the enjoyment is because you don't know the real one. So this illusion leaves us some ununderstandable bitterness in our heart that we cannot really understand what it is. Just like all these rich people and famous people, they enjoy, but they are all miserable, in misery. You can see that they are not satisfied with all their money and power. They are always in misery. At least the poor people have a goal in life, to get money, to get power. But those who have them, they don't even have this kind of illusion. They are just miserable. They don't know what to do with life. So the when we get to the transcendental world, then our tendency to enjoy manifests itself again. And there is no enjoyment if not in Premarasa, in the relationship with Krishna. Because enjoyment do not come from just liberation or just even happiness itself. Because just be happy and not relating and not having pastimes, you're not really enjoying. So that's why, although Srila Vyasadeva has explained how to enjoy in this world in a progressive way, in such a way you enjoy and at the same time you elevate yourself up to the sattva stage. And from the sattva stage, he also taught that there is a spiritual world in the Upanishad. The Upanishad basically explained the spiritual world. Not the personal, most of them, they don't clearly explain the spiritual world. There is no Upanishad that explains Krishna's pastimes. Although some Upanishad, like, of course, the Sri Upanishad, Chandogya Upanishad, Katha Upanishad, and other Upanishad, they explain very clearly that the Supreme Reality is a person. It's very clear. But most, it has to be said, that most of the Upanishads do not. They just stops at the description of the transcendental world, means the transcendental energy, how the, let's say, the basic bricks with which the spiritual world is made, but do not explain what is inside this house is made of spiritual bricks. So Narada Muni explained to Srila Vyasadeva that he has given material enjoyment in the Vedas and liberation, but he has not given the taste experimented in Then he started to write Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures. And in the future we would have seen, like in particular, in our Sampradaya, there is this parampara. Parampara is a Sampradaya, and like the branch, the Sampradaya is the trunk of the tree, and the Sampradaya is the branches. So in our parampara, there was this incredible happening of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming, which gave a particular spice in the Vaishnava philosophy, in the philosophy of our Sampradaya, which is Radha Krishna Prema. There was nowhere and never to be found anywhere. So this is the maximum. There is nothing beyond that. There is nothing more than Radha Krishna Prema, all the rasa that the six Goswamis explain to us.
In preaching, we find difficulties. The difficulty is how to judge. Of course, we are not supposed to judge anyone.
How to?
How to judge a person, what to give him. See, the Srimad Bhagavatam and C.C. Chaitanya Charitamrita are for the intellectual class. It cannot be given to all the people. It's difficult to understand also. We understand because of the mercy of our Guru and Srila Prabhupada and Vaishnavas. But when we preach to common public and little intelligent class and anything, how to approach them and what to give them? It's not that we can give to Krishna Prem all of a sudden, you know, we can explain, though, because we know little about all these things.
Yes.
But start with, yesterday I was discussing with one gentleman. Of course, he's learned, he could understand. But many times it's, you know, uneducated people come and they're ignorant people come. How to start with a preaching to such people?
Preaching is a science. Preaching is a science, and only we can give gifts, but only experience gives you the full capacity of preaching, because every person is different. When we preach, we have to keep our eyes and our antennas very awake and perceive, because you can see by the face or the person, if the person is receiving or rejecting or simply not understanding. It's not difficult. It's just something in their face, in their eyes. It takes a lot of psychology. It takes a lot of experience. The last thing we should do while preaching is to show our knowledge, to make a show of ourselves. There is no mercy. Mercy should be I preach to them. It doesn't matter if I had to be so elementary, and the people may think that I don't know much philosophy because I'm not speaking much philosophy. And we should not just open the mouth and give vent and just spit out concepts like this. No, we should be very sattvic in our preaching and try to understand what kind of person we have in front and say the right things. So actually, there is no, it's not possible to say how you should preach. We should just say that you study a lot, and because it doesn't matter if you are not going to use the knowledge you read in the books. Because this knowledge will give you the weight. The guru means weight, the internal weight, knowledge. And that weight is perceivable by some. Most of the people will perceive, although you may speak very simply, they will perceive that you got a lot more to say. And this weight is important. But you will put outside only the part that people may be able to appreciate. So first of all, we have to study a lot. And after, if you study a lot, and after a while you stop studying, after some time, you will see that your preaching will become dry. And it's just notions that you put outside, but there is not that freshness, that freshness that it comes from the daily presence in your life of Shastras. So this is exceedingly important that we read every day at least 1 or 2 hours or 3 hours, if possibly, the Shastras. And then when we go out preaching, we should have a strong desire to help people. And we want to help people only if we are happy about our life, our Krishna conscious life. Because if we are miserable, then why we should go outside to give our misery to others? People are already miserable. We don't need to give them other misery. So that's another thing. Not only we had to study, but we had to live in purity our life. We should not sin. Because if we sin, then we'll be unhappy. And then when we go outside, people will not. So knowledge and practice and purity, they should be together. And this is very important. And then be merciful in the sense that try to understand what kind of people you have in front and give them what they want. Sometimes you have to joke. Sometimes you have to be very serious. Sometimes you have to be very simple. Sometimes you have to show a lot of knowledge so they will not understand, but they will appreciate. And appreciation, even without understanding, is important, because next time they will come only to hear the guy who knew how to speak very flowerly, who could, I don't understand what he says, but he must be very intelligent because he says some incredible things, you know. And sometimes it is like this also in preaching, especially preaching to scholars. Sometimes I used to, there was my service for a couple years of my life. I was preaching, I was given the service to preach in universities and professors and researchers, this kind of persons. So I had to study a lot, a real lot, and also to study their philosophy, because you cannot go in university just ignorant of what they speak about. You had to know something about. And for instance, one time I was invited by the important university in Rome to speak about the Big Bang theory. So I had to read books about the Big Bang, because otherwise you cannot talk about it. You had to show that you know something about the topic or the conference. So they were very impressed. That one shaved guy with a strange sign in the forehead and dressed in a white sheet. And, you know, he knew about Big Bang. He knew about the relativity theory of Einstein, all these kind of things. So it depends very much what is your service. It depends very much where you go to preach. It depends very much what kind of person you are. You have to adjust your preaching. And never preach without considering who you are in front, because it would not be. You cannot be very simple in the universities. You cannot be very complicated in preaching to common people. You cannot speak about Leelas in Sunday feast. You cannot speak about Radha Krishna Leelas to people. You know, in the restaurant you talk about vegetarianism. Because that's why they are there. Most of them, they come here to eat, you know. And some of them, they don't want to be preached. Then you just be a nice guy. Just you go there and smile, very clean, shaved. And so they will appreciate that we have in front a gentleman that is also preaching. Being always very cleaned and very ironed, so that people will appreciate our gentlemanship. So preaching is very, very, it's a science, it's very wide. Prabhu, you want?
Much for yes. Your nice explanation. It's a wonderful class.
Thank you.
Do you have one more minute?
I have all the time in the world. I can stay here the whole day.
Thank you. In the purport, Prabhupada is emphasizing the acceptance of Achinta Shakti. And he's saying that if we just have faith that there's an inconceivable potency, then it's very easy to accommodate all of these contradictions and wonderful superhuman activities and powers that Krishna manifests. But from an intelligent point of view, it seems just a very convenient way of describing imagination. It's the Chinta Shakti. So my question has to do, and the reason I'm bringing this up is many intelligent people, they refute even Srila Prabhupada's books or Vaishnava philosophy because of this point, a Chinta Shakti, that it's an inconceivable energy. So my question has to do is what is the scientific proof of a Chinta Shakti? You know, how can we actually prove that a Chinta Shakti exists and it's not just an imagination or a convenient philosophical way of accommodating something that you really can't explain?
Wow. So nice questions today. That's very interesting. It would be, there is a lot of things to say. Let's say some of them. For instance, let's say that you are very interested to study physics, and you want to know about the how a nuclear bomb works. So you go there, and you start studying, and after a few days studying, you go to a professor and say, show me the nuclear reaction, show me how the world works, show me, explain me. And the professor will say, it is a Chintya. And he says, well, what is this? This is not science. Science should not be a Chintya. Science should explain. And you know what professor will answer? No, it is not a Chintya. It is a Chintya for you. You are not able to understand. But if you are patient and you continue studying, then one day you will understand. So these contradictions are not contradictions for us, because we understand, because we have been schooled, because we have been studying for decades our philosophy. So if someone wants to arrive at the same conclusion that we have, we didn't arrive to this to the conclusions of that there are no contradictions in our philosophy because we believe by faith, you know. If there is something I remember as a boy, the thing that made me to become a atheist, I thought to be an atheist, is because every time I would go to a Christian Catholic church, I was born in Rome, so it's the, you know, is the Catholic Church. There is a church every 100 meters in Rome. So I was going to school at the time. The religion hour was compulsory in schools. So 1 hour you had to study religion. So I was making all these questions, and they would reply, no, you had to believe. And there was also a few questions about Achintya, about inconceivably potency of the Lord. Like, for instance, for me, it was inconceivable that God was infinite good. And at the same time, you see so many miseries in this world. I could not understand. That's a contradiction, you know. So now we understand why. But at that time, their answer was, you have to simply keep your faith. As faith is not a good instrument, because it appeals to to sentiment. You have faith because of some feeling, a sentiment. But sentiment is not, it's not good, because just like it came, it will go away. It's fluctuating. It's fluctuating on the base of what happens externally. But knowledge it's appeals to the intelligence, not to the mind. So it's rooted, it's strong. So contradictions had to be, are you saying when you put together two contradiction, there is a word? No, there is another word. You reconcile. Well, you reconcile the two contradictions, and you have to understand the nature of each of the elements that you want to reconcile. While you, in the moment you understand the two contradictions, then you understand that there is a reconciliation. But you have to study. It's not that you just watch, and if you understand, you accept. If you understand, you reject. It is not serious. Krishna consciousness is not a religion. Krishna consciousness is not a philosophy. Krishna consciousness is a science. It's a science that cannot be understood unless you study and practice. Just like you cannot understand physics if you don't do a lot of experiments in the laboratory. Without experiments, it doesn't go inside, because it's just concept, and it will, this concept will just go around in your mind like ghosts, you know, and never enter inside. So at the point that you will meet a contradiction, they will not be able to understand it, and you will give it up. Many devotees gave it up because of that, because of, for instance, of few things that you could not agree with Srila Prabhupada. The moon thing, for instance, you know, and the Christ issue. He went to India, he didn't want to India, he was like this. There were a few topics that made quite a few devotees leave our movement, because the faith in the spiritual master broke down. So we have a science here, so it needs more study. And every time there are contrasts between, then you had to take them and you had to explain. But if the people are lazy, then you should tell them, look, you know, sit down. I will explain to you, but you had to have your some time. It's not that in a few words you will understand contradictions, you know. And we should show them that we are not here because of faith. Faith is born of knowledge, not vice versa. First knowledge, and then faith. Shraddha does not mean faith in the sense of Christian or the Christian perspective. Shraddha means initial impetus. That's Srila Prabhupada translates Shraddha in faith in several places, but also it gives a few times the real explanation of faith. And faith means something that it brings you, the push, the initial push, which comes from previous activities. It doesn't come from the heart, just imagination. So we are able to explain all contradictions. It's just a question of how much the listener is ready to listen. Sorry? Yes, the qualification of the speaker, the qualification of the listener. Because if the speaker is not able, then you should very humbly say, and sorry, I cannot explain you, but there are devotees who can explain you, because they have studied more, they have practiced more. It's nothing bad to say, I don't know. Better to say, I don't know, than to give an imaginative explanation. Yes. Yes, but not that empiricism is not part of our system, analytical system. It's just not complete. You cannot understand it all with your senses. That doesn't mean that you cannot understand anything with your senses. Right now, we are still not pure devotees of the highest order. That doesn't mean, but we are understanding something about Krishna. So we also use the empiric system to understand Krishna consciousness, but that is not complete. And in the process of using our material senses and intelligence to understand Krishna, these senses and intelligence get purified. So while we try to understand with the material senses, the senses will become less material. And then we'll understand more. And while understanding more and realizing more, our senses, with intelligence included, we get more and more purified in a chain reaction of advancement in knowledge and realization. That is the what we want. So we should not, my humble opinion, we should not tell to people that your senses... when I say senses, I also mean the subtle senses, mind, intelligence. We should not tell to people that the material senses are useless for understanding Krishna consciousness. We should tell them are incomplete, are imperfect, not useless. That's all we have at the moment. And also, to conclude, how many scientific findings were found thanks to accepting by faith? There is a term, but now in English I cannot rend it. Some of their findings are based on something they accept in the beginning. Okay, then, they give an hypothesis and they prove it after. In other words, thanks to the right hypothesis, which is not possible to demonstrate at the beginning, but it will be possible to demonstrate only if you build up a system, and that system itself will prove the beginning hypothesis. There is another term to define this system. So this is what we do. There is a part, there is a vast horizon of knowledge that we cannot understand right now. Then we accept it, not by faith, we accept it because we understand it. By accepting it, we'll be able one day to prove it. To prove that which we are not be able to prove today. So this is very intelligent way of proceeding. Something I can understand right now and in practice. Then I will understand more and more. Something that I cannot understand, one day I will be able to prove it. And this is quite common experience by us because we are understanding something now that we never be able to understand 30 or 40 years ago. And this is an experience in our life that every day we understand a bit more by Krishna's mercy and Guru's mercy. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Mananath Prabhu ki.